stationary cosmology. The high energy density of the vacuum drives exponential inflationary expansion of the universe, and pockets or bubbles of different kinds are being constantly formed, and we live in one of such bubbles. One of the problems of this scenario, unresolved problems, I should say, which has recently attracted much attention, is the measure problem. What is the measure problem? Well, in this scenario of eternal inflation, so inflation will continue forever, and these bubbles will keep forming. Anything that can possibly happen will happen in the universe, and it will happen an infinite number of times. So we have to learn how to compare these infinities of different types of events that can happen. Since otherwise, you won't be able to distinguish between probable events and highly improbable events, in which case you won't be able to make any predictions at all. So this is the problem. The problem is exacerbated in the case of multiverse picture, which is suggested by string theory, where you have a multitude of different types of bubbles that can be formed, each bubble having its own values of the constants of nature. And my discussion will be in the context of the multiverse, but if you want to think that this is only the problem of the multiverse, this is not so. Even if all bubbles are of the same kind, still, in order to predict, say, the multiples of the CMB, you need a measure. Okay, so there are two approaches that have been followed to this problem. One is can be called empirical approach. There is a number of proposals now on the table for different kinds of measures. Luckily, you could say, most of them have severe problems. And so we can try to study these proposals and see which ones of them are in severe conflict with observation and weed them out. So this will narrow down the choice and maybe even down to one. And the other approach is the, you can call fundamentalist approach, which is we want to derive the measure from some sort of fundamental theory. So we want to know why we are using this measure and not the other. Now, I'm going to argue that both of these approaches appear to point to one measure, which is the scale factor cutoff measure. And I'll tell you what it is. Okay, so the plan is first I'll describe the space-time structure of an eternally inflating universe. Then I'll discuss some of the proposed measures and the problems. And finally, I will sketch a possible way in which a measure can be derived from fundamental theory. Okay, so this is the a space-time diagram of the eternal inflating universe. Time is going upwards here, and this horizontal line on the top is future infinity. This is kind of a conformal diagram where you bring infinity to finite distance by a conformal transformation. Now, bubbles nucleate and expand in this space-time, rapidly approaching the speed of light, so they can be accurately approximated by light cones. So these triangles are bubbles. Now, bubbles can be basically of three different types. First, there can be bubbles with positive vacuum energy. And such bubbles are inflating themselves, and they also become sites of eternal inflation. So for example, this yellow bubble will continue expanding, and in it, an infinite number of red bubbles will eventually be formed. Now, also there are terminal bubbles. For example, there are bubbles, this anti de Sitter bubbles, bubbles with negative vacuum energy. Such bubbles develop singularities, and that's the story ends as far as those bubbles are concerned. And there is also intermediate case, which are Minkowski bubbles. In string theory, for example, there are such vacua, supersymmetric vacua with zero energy, And these bubbles will have this structure with future null infinity. Also, they're kind of hats in this conformal diagram. So this is a pretty busy picture of, and actually the, smaller bubbles, the bubble is smaller if it is formed later, but in fact it will grow to infinite size all the same. Now, if you follow a world line of some observer, with probability one, this observer will be hit by a bubble and then by another bubble, by an infinite number of bubbles. However, there will be some world lines which will be hit by no bubbles. The probability for this is zero, and so such points form a fractal set of dimension less than three, but there is this fractal of, this eternal fractal of world lines that are never hit by bubbles. Now, this is future infinity. You may ask, what about the past? It is now a well-known fact that eternally inflating spacetimes are past incomplete. So inflation cannot be continued to past infinity. Luckily, this has no impact on the measure, because the eternal inflation is a attractor behavior, and all the infinite number of bubbles are all concentrated near future boundary. So the evolution doesn't really depend on where you start, and we can expect that the measure will have the same property. So we can use this as one of the measure selection criteria. Okay, so let me discuss some of the proposed measures. Perhaps the simplest way to regulate the infinities of eternal inflation is simply to introduce a cutoff at some global time. So how do we do this? Suppose we choose a hypersurface sigma. It doesn't have to be a Cauchy surface for the entire universe, just a patch of space-like hypersurface. And we consider a congruence of time-like geodesics that go forward in time. Then we measure time along these geodesics using some choice of time variable and cut it off at certain value of time and count only observations that were made prior to that time. So this is a cutoff. We can use, for t, we can use proper time along the geodesics. Another natural choice is to use the expansion factor along the geodesics. In the end, we can take the limit t to infinity. Now, what you find when you calculate probabilities using this kind of prescription, you find that the, as you would hope, that the resulting probability does not depend on the initial state. So you can start in any vacuum, and you get probability distribution that is independent of the initial state, which is good. But the result, the probabilities do depend on what you use as a time variable. Whether you use, for example, proper time or expansion factor, it matters. Why it matters? It's not difficult to understand. It is because this space-time is expanding very fast. Space is expanding very fast. So most of the volume is concentrated right there near the cutoff. And therefore, it does matter exactly how you draw this cutoff surface. Okay. Now, I should mention, since I use the term scale factor, I should say that usually this term is used for homogeneous isotropic cosmologies, but you don't have to assume any such symmetry here. For example, you can think that on this initial surface, geodesics are the initial points of the geodesics are uniformly spread, so it's kind of some kind of dust. And then, as you follow these geodesics, you look at the density of the dust in the orthogonal plane, and you introduce the cutoff when this density drops below a certain value. Right? You can do this this doesn't assume any particular symmetry. And even when it is known that such coordinate construction breaks down, the geodesics may start crossing at some point. But this is not a problem as well, because when they cross, the density grows. You're looking for the points where the density decreases and you introduce the cutoff where it drops below a certain value. Okay, now, proper time seems to be a good natural choice of time variable, but it leads to some very weird predictions. With proper time slicing, the universe expands very fast. The expansion is driven by the fastest expanding vacuum in the multiverse. And from there, it trickles down to all other vacuum, because in this fastest expanding vacuum, whose volume will grow like e to the kappa t with kappa, where we can expect toward a Planck mass, in that vacuum, bubbles of other vacuum will be produced, and they will inherit this very fast time dependence. So in such a rapidly expanding space, observers who take a little less time to evolve are rewarded by a huge factor, because they can form closer to the cutoff where there is much more volume available for them to form. So for example, observers who evolve faster than us by a billion years, and for example, measure temperature 2.9 Kelvin rather than 2.7 Kelvin, should be more numerous by this factor, e to the kappa, this delta tau, and this is e to the 10 to the 60. So it is then very hard to explain why we measure 2.7 rather than 2.9, and for that matter, not much higher value of the temperature. So this measure, this is the so-called Youngness paradox, and because of that, the proper time cutoff seems to be ruled out. On the other hand, if you use the scale factor cutoff, then all volumes grow simply like the scale factor. So there is no reason to be in a hurry. I mean, all the volumes, there is no reward for expanding very fast. And the probability of having temperature 2.9 Kelvin is greater than 2.7 simply by this expansion factor from one temperature to the other, which is a very mild bias, Youngness bias. It's not ruled out observationally and may even have some interesting consequences, as we'll discuss. Okay, what other measures do we have? There is this proposal about causal patch measure. This is actually an attempt to motivate the measure by considerations of fundamental theory. In particular, this was inspired by string theory. The idea is that we should limit, when we compare different observations, we should limit the space-time region under consideration to the region accessible to a single observer. Okay, so this is the world line of observer, which Lenny Susskind calls census taker. And suppose this observer ends up in a Minkowski vacuum, then he will live forever, reaching this future infinity, and this is his past light cone. He will see things in this past light cone, and this is the proposal is that we limit consideration to this region. Now, there are some, one idea here is the idea of complementarity, which is motivated by consideration of black holes in string theory. Presumably, the degrees of freedom inside and outside the horizon are not independent. At least this is what is being argued by string theorists. And if you concentrate on the region outside the horizon, you pretty much know, if you were able to decode Hawking radiation, you will pretty much know what's happening inside. So they assume that similar things is happening here. And so this census taker, this is his horizon. And somehow stuff that is happening outside the horizon is encoded in what this guy sees in his localized region. I find it very hard to believe. And so far, there is no evidence that this is really so. On the other hand, there is another interesting idea, which is the holography, which somehow that what is happening inside this region is encoded on the boundary of this region. And there is some evidence for that, actually. In particular, these authors argued, I think somewhat persuasively, that the four-dimensional theory in this region is, in certain sense, equivalent or dual to a Euclidean theory on the two-dimensional boundary, which you obtain at the intersection of this future infinity of the De Sitter space and this null infinity of Minkowski space. So I'll get back to this. I actually, in the proposal that I'm going to discuss, I'm going to adopt this holography, but not the complementarity. I think one unattractive feature of this measure is that it does depend on the initial state. What you see depends on which vacuum you started in. And that, I think, is not what you should have in eternal inflation. Finally, there is this pocket-based measure, of which I was a great enthusiast for a long time. But now I kind of decided against it under the weight of evidence. In pocket-based measure, the probabilities are expressed as products. This little pj is the abundance of bubbles of type j. So for different types of bubbles, there are different abundances. And this wj is the weight factor, which characterizes the number of observations of a given kind inside such a bubble. Now, how do you evaluate these factors? So I'll just very briefly sketch it. So you use the same construction with this hypersurface sigma and congruence of geodesics. Then you pick out at random n geodesics. And you count, you follow these geodesics, they will cross some bubbles in the future. And you count all the, only those bubbles which are crossed by one of these, one or more of these geodesics. Then, based on this subset, you calculate bubble abundance, and then you let n to infinity. So this is how you, you evaluate bubble abundances. And the weight factors, you sample equal comoving volumes in different bubbles. This requires definition as well, because different bubbles have different expansion laws, so what does it mean to use equal volumes? What is used here is that all bubbles start the same. They're all curvature dominated at the initial as they form. They all expand as T. And so you start, you choose equal comoving volumes at these early stages, and then you follow them comovingly and count whatever observations you like. So this measure has some nice properties, but one of the properties that leads to strange predictions is this. That large inflation inside bubbles is rewarded. Any bubble universe which has, I mean, which we have, may have a chance to inhabit, must have some inflation inside. So because all bubbles start curvature dominated, you need to make the universe flat, you need inflation. But now, if you start with equal comoving volumes, and one bubble has a lot of inflation and another not so much inflation. So that bubble which has a lot of inflation will yield much more volume and therefore much more observers. So you discover that the probability is proportional to the expansion factor cubed during inflation inside the bubble. And this leads to some problems. The problem is the so-called Q catastrophe. So the expansion factor, Z, of inflation inside the bubble depends exponentially on the shape of the inflaton potential. And as a result, any parameter which is sensitive to the shape of the potential will have an exponential probability distribution. One such parameter is the amplitude of density perturbations. So if I'm talking about now this potential V of phi is the potential that that drives the inflation inside the bubble. So the amplitude of density perturbation is determined by the slope and the height kind of this potential. And because z depends exponentially on this form, the probability distribution will be exponential in Q. And why is this a problem? The problem, it is a problem because the observed value of the amplitude of density perturbations seems to sit rather comfortably in the middle of its entropic range. In other words, if you increase it by a factor of three or decrease it by a factor of three, there is no obvious catastrophe that is going to happen. But if the probability distribution for Q were exponential, we would be driven either to very large or very small values of Q. And this is not what is being observed. So this is a problem. And this is not only for Q, this would be for any parameter that has, that is correlated with the inflaton potential. For the scale factor case, as I said, the scale factor does not reward large expansion. And so there is practically no dependence on the expansion factor. There is no Q catastrophe there. Okay, so this is the report card for different measures. I should have mentioned that there is also a measure which I haven't discussed in detail, the stationary measure that Andre Linde is developing, but it has the same z dependence, so it has the same Q catastrophe problem. Okay, so proper time cutoff has the Young-ness paradox. The pocket-based measure has the Q catastrophe, and stationary measure has the same. Causal patch measure depends on the choice of the initial state. So the only measure that is free of these problems is the scale factor measure. So this seems to suggest at least that this is the winner so out of the measures that have been proposed so far. Okay, now, let me discuss some observational predictions from this measure. Arguably, the greatest success of the multiverse picture is the prediction of the value of the cosmological constant. So we should check, the first thing to be checked is what does the scale factor measure say about the expected values of lambda. I don't have time to discuss this in any detail, but let me just sketch the situation. So here is the, one thing is that maybe a bit surprising is that the scale factor measure actually changes the situation. There are some standard calculations. Well, I didn't list the references here. It starts with Weinberg. And there was a number of calculations of probability distributions for lambda. But with scale factor cutoff, those calculations do not actually apply quantitatively. The resulting distribution is somewhat different. Now, here are the assumptions that we used. And these are mostly the standard assumptions. Well, one assumption is that what is called the flat prior. It's not listed here, unfortunately, but basically what it says is that the landscape itself does not favor lambda equal to zero, lambda near zero. Basically, you expect the values of lambda in the landscape to be spread over a huge interval of a Planck, of a, about Planck scale. Only a tiny portion of this interval can give structures like galaxies. Because if lambda is very large or very small, you're not going to have any galaxies. So if you have a smooth distribution on very large scale and you look at it in a very tiny interval, the distribution will look like a constant. And that's basically the assumption we used here. The assumption is that the distribution is not singular at lambda equal to zero, and there is no reason for it to be. Okay. Then the selection factor. We assume that the number of observers is proportional to the fraction of matter clustered in large galaxies. The idea being is that there will be a certain number of stars per unit mass in galaxies and certain number of observers per star. So basically, when you evaluate the mass in large galaxies, this will be proportional to the number of observers in the corresponding region of the universe. Now, also, since we are doing a cutoff, we have to say when the observers make their observation. And we assume that they do the observation about the same time as we do, about 5 billion years from the time of the halo collapse. When the halo is formed, after 5 billion years, people like us or some creatures evolve who measure lambda. And this is not what was done in most of the analysis before, but we also included negative values of lambda. And there we had to assume something about what happens when the universe starts contracting and collapses. Here we assume that this contracting phase is not hospitable for life. Basically, in the contracting phase, the structures start merging. It becomes a pretty hazardous environment. All this, we tested what happens when you relax these assumptions, but I'm just showing you what happens when you use it, these numbers like here. So this is the distribution, and this is lambda in units of the observed value, right? So this is the observed value. So you see that this is the one sigma region, this is the two sigma region. So you see that the agreement with the observed value is pretty good. It's better than in the standard calculations, because in the standard calculations, the distribution is spread much more towards larger values. With the scale factor cutoff, the large lambda tail is suppressed, and the reason is very simple. Suppose lambda is, you increase lambda, right? Galaxies can still form, but once it is formed, lambda dominates, right? Now, when lambda dominates, the universe starts expanding exponentially, and this triggers the scale factor cutoff. So basically, observers who formed in the lambda-dominated phase are discriminated against in this in this prescription. And that's the reason why you see a suppression there. Okay, let me tell you briefly about predictions for omega. Where is the chairman? 5 minutes? 6 minutes, okay. 1 minute, predictions for omega. The expected value of the curvature parameter depends on the amount of inflation inside the bubble. The measures where the probability is proportional to the expansion factor predict omega equal to 1, basically, because you expect very huge expansion factor. Scale factor cutoff does not have such a dependence, and so there is a non-negligible probability of observing negative curvature of the universe. This is the probability distribution. See, this is 1 minus omega. So very small values of omega are suppressed because then you form no structures. But then you have a very broad distribution of values which are less than 1. There is a probability of only about 5% in this range where you can expect a detectable negative value of omega. So it is, but still, there is this possibility, which is very interesting. Okay, so in the rest, in the remaining few minutes, I would like to discuss how we can hope to derive measure from fundamental theory. Because, of course, scale factor cutoff measure seems to be doing okay, but then what's the guarantee that this is the right measure? This is based on work with Jaume Garriga, and this is very new, so it may well be wrong. As inspiration, we take these holographic ideas that Lenny Susskind and his collaborators used for the census taker measure, and also proposal by Andy Strominger, who suggested that if you have a De Sitter space, the four-dimensional theory in De Sitter space is equivalent, in a certain sense, to a three-dimensional Euclidean theory living on the future infinity. Now, people argue that there are some problems with this idea. From my point of view, the main problem is that there is no such thing as asymptotically De Sitter space in string theory. De Sitter space is unstable, and so the future infinity will not look like this, it will look like that. There will be all sorts of bubbles and fractal structure at this infinity. So, therefore, we suggest kind of a natural extension of this conjecture, which is the four-dimensional theory describing this multiverse is equivalent to a three-dimensional theory at future infinity, which is the true future infinity of eternal inflation. And this future infinity has to be suitably defined. I'll say a few words what you think it is like. Okay, so this is the future infinity. So this is kind of, if you look at this line from the top, this is what it looks like. So there are bubbles within bubbles within bubbles. Now, each bubble, like this, nucleates further bubbles inside it, and it becomes a fractal sponge because it's kind of eaten up, all the volume is eaten up by these further bubbles. Now, there will be some terminal bubbles, like Minkowski bubbles. And as Freivogel and collaborators argued, that we expect that these bubbles should actually be describable by what happens at their boundaries. So you can think of them as holes with two-dimensional conformal field theories living at the boundaries of the holes. So this is the structure at future infinity, which is an interesting mathematical structure. You have these fractal bubbles, and you also have holes corresponding to terminal bubbles with these two-dimensional theories living at their boundaries. And one could think that these De Sitter bubbles should correspond to instantons of this three-dimensional theory. Okay, what does it have to do with the measure? We are interested in the measure here. Okay, the measure problem is the measure of cutoff, infrared cutoff, which is large distance cutoff. And this infrared cutoff in four-dimensional theory corresponds to ultraviolet short-distance cutoff in this three-dimensional theory at infinity. Let me just sketch how this works out. So the hope is that when we have this field theory at infinity, there is some natural way to do cutoff in this theory, to do normalization in this three-dimensional theory. And that will translate into the preferred way of cutting off the four-dimensional theory, and that is introducing the measure. All right, so suppose we do renormalization in this future infinity three-dimensional theory by integrating out short wavelength modes. So the remaining modes have wavelengths bigger than some 1 over m, where m is the large mass scale. Now, the corresponding these are like co-moving modes, right? The corresponding four-dimensional modes have wavelengths like this. 1 over m, and this is the scale factor, because in four dimensions, the mode's wavelength changes proportional to the scale factor. Now we also need to introduce a four-dimensional cutoff at some fixed physical length scale. You can think of this scale as a renormalization scale in four dimensions, or you can think of it, if you wish, as a resolution scale in four dimensions, that you want just to resolve what's happening, say, on the atomic scale, whatever scale you're interested in. Now, if you introduce this, that then you have to cut off at the maximum, you have to cut off at certain scale factor size, which is given by this formula. The reason is simply that when you have a minimum size for your wavelength, this minimum size grows with the scale factor, and in due course, it will become as large as you wish. So you have to stop when your minimum wavelength becomes equal to your cutoff. And then in renormalization, you take the limit m to infinity, and that leads to this scale factor cutoff going to infinity, which is exactly the procedure of the scale factor cutoff that we are using. Just cut it off at the given value of a scale factor, then take the limit to infinity. Let me just mention that scale factor, of course, depends on which congruence you use, and different choices of congruences of geodesics are related by conformal transformations at spatial infinity. So the fact that the measure is independent of the choice of the congruence of geodesics suggests that this theory, three-dimensional theory at spatial infinity, should be conformally invariant. So in conclusion, the scale factor cutoff appears to be a promising measure proposal. Its prediction for lambda is in a good agreement with the data. It makes an interesting prediction for omega. There is no Q catastrophe in this measure. It is independent of initial state. And I try to argue that it may be derivable from fundamental theory. Thank you.
We have time for a couple of brief questions. Yeah, Jim?
I think that Busso's proposal basically is somewhat similar to this census taker proposal. Basically, what Busso says is, let's take some geodesic and follow a geodesic observer, and whichever. But causal entropic, there are two ingredients there. One is what is the space-time region you're considering, and the second, what is the kind of selection factor that you're using. This entropic is the refers to the selection factor. But they pick an observer, a geodesic, and they see what happens on this world line of this observer. Of course, it depends on which world line you choose. So it does depend on initial condition. They say, okay, let us consider an ensemble of such observers, but then you need initial distribution for that ensemble. And Busso argues that, okay, maybe the wave function of the universe will suggest an initial distribution, but it does depend on the initial state.
Okay, another question? Yeah.
I have a question about how phase transitions might affect this picture. The universe undergoes an electroweak phase transition at one point and releases a lambda of order 10 to the 60. That means that before that phase transition occurred, there had to be another lambda of order minus 10 to the 60. So the question is, if you go back above the phase transition, what is the probability that you would have found yourself most likely in the universe where lambda was minus 10 to the 60?
You're talking about negative lambdas?
There had to have been a lambda before the phase transition, which is equal and opposite to the one that's produced by the phase transition.
Well, but if lambda is negative before, the universe should have recollapsed very quickly.
So let lambda be positive before, I don't mind, and then
okay.
And then make it negative, then let's make it get a negative piece coming from the phase transition.
Yes.
But nonetheless, can you calculate the probability that an observer above the electroweak transition would most likely have found himself in a universe with a lambda of order 10 to the 60? That's the question.
I'm afraid I don't fully understand the question. Observer Well, you're talking about hypothetical observers who can survive very large values of lambda, right? No, census takers live in flat space, so lambda is zero there. But in principle, this measure allows you to calculate probabilities of anything. It just defines the space-time region. And in that space-time region, whatever you want to compare, it's a finite region, you can calculate the probability of it. If you, for example, if you take just all values of lambda are positive, right? And then the universe is just consists of bubbles with different values of lambda. In such a universe, the probability distribution is favors small values of lambda, for example. So the large values of lambda are not very probable. I'm not sure whether it answers your question.
I think we're going to have to move on at this point. Let's thank Alex again.